Good morning and welcome to our Father's Day edition, pre-Father's Day edition of the Roundtable and the Roundtable panel this morning.
Every day is Father's Day.
Good point, Ray. Good point. And we welcome you to the discussion roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a myriad of issues to discuss this morning, and we will jump right in. Let me first introduce the panel to you. WAMC newsman Ray Graff was the first voice you heard this morning. Good morning,
Hello.
Raymond.
Hi.
Also joining us, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Hello, Alan.
Well, as Ray says, hi.
Hi. And political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. So again, we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about what happened yesterday. We on this program, we were talking about the issues in Iraq and the escalation of violence in Iraq and the emergence of details saying that they were looking for our help. And yesterday, the White House responded and basically said that they confronted this and said that they were reassuring Iraq that it would help the army fend off militants who have overrun much of the country and now threaten Baghdad. And they referred to it as an urgent emergency situation and decided to move on several fronts, although this, what they call a grave situation, is still yet, at least in my mind, to completely understand what we will do, when we will do it, and how we will do it without escalating things any further, which I guess is still up for discussion. But at least they were addressing the fact that they would indeed do something. And Alan, I guess the question is, this could be this is something I assume the Obama administration would have rather not had to deal with, but here they are having to deal with it.
Well, one would wonder whether or not with the incredible amount of resources and intelligent resources we have. I mean, we talked about this on the air months and months ago, of the risk of losing all of our arms that we gave to the Iraqis, to the insurgents. And in fact, there's always the issue as to whether they want us over there. You know, you said, and it was quite right, they wanted us, or they asked us. Who's the they? You know, if it's the people who've been quoted in the New York Times this morning and all over the place, they don't seem to be as scared of the people who are coming in as the people who are going out, and that is something we have to acknowledge. I mean, is there a way out of this in the long run? And that's the big question.
So John Boehner gets up yesterday, comments on the situation, and says the president is taking a nap. Was the president taking a nap?
No, the president's not taking a nap. The president, I mean, this, as far as I was concerned, when Boehner said that, it was just a way to deflect attention from what's going on within his own party, within his own house right now. The president's not taking a nap. This is a no-win situation in terms of going back into Iraq. We shouldn't do it alone. We need to have our allies with us. If we go it alone, once again, we'll be put in the position of our folks being killed. And spending billions and billions of dollars on an unwinnable situation.
That's right. And a situation which we can't get out of.
Right.
I mean, that's the terrible thing here. I was talking to Roselle this morning and I was saying, you know, you go back to the old movie channel and you see all of nothing's changed.
Literally, in what way?
Nothing has changed. Well, in that we're caught in there. We're trying to fight an insurgency in which the outside power comes in, Ray, and says, we're going to make it better. But you got people who don't want us there. You got a large population that doesn't want us there. And, the leadership has to worry, really be concerned that we're coming in, and make them even more unpopular.
This is sort of, Rachel Maddow last night had some stuff up on the screen about our engaging in wars where there's an insurgency, and we always lose. We haven't won since Korea, and I don't know if we even won that. So maybe we haven't won since World War II. But we always lose. We lost in Vietnam. We've been losing in these battles. You know, everybody can say mission accomplished all they want, but the fact is it's impossible to accomplish this mission when you're dealing with folks who think they're fighting for God. And that's exactly what's going on here. It's a political situation there. It's a religious situation there. And, you know, you're fighting people who think, who will die for the cause. They will be martyrs for the cause. How do you fight that unless you wipe out the entire population, which isn't going to be possible?
Well, not the entire population. I mean, there are those 500,000 who fled Mosul. And, you know, if an ally asks you for support, you certainly have to consider it. Now, I doubt President Obama is considering putting boots on the ground, but I'll bet you he's considering some airstrikes on the training facilities, which they were asked to provide, you know, weeks ago, and said, well, let's not get involved in this. This is a different situation. There are now reports, perhaps unconfirmed, but reports reported by BBC and otherwise, of mass beheadings in the streets of some of these places.
Right.
And there are people, perhaps it's 50-50, perhaps half of the 500,000 who fled Mosul are more afraid of the Iraqi government than they are of the, they call them terrorists, but they're really Islamist insurgents. And then there's the other half that's heading north that is afraid of the insurgents. So as an ally, quote unquote, what does one do? You have to certainly take seriously a request for aid in this situation where the second largest city has been taken. Basically, the insurgent force, and it's pretty close to an army, is moving at will around the country. So what do you do?
So let me bring back. Go ahead, Alan.
I was just going to say, and then there's one other thing to be considered here. What happens when the civilians start to get slaughtered by our airstrikes? Who's going to get the blame then?
And these 500,000, they're going to these other Arab countries or where, who are all going to get caught up in this eventually. You know, Syria is all caught up in this. Where are they going to go?
They're going north right now to that autonomous region near Turkey. And Turkey has a stake in this now as well because of 80 or so people who have now been taken hostage. So Turkey is a possible player in all of this as well.
I want to talk about the politics of it because that's how we started off in the question about the Obama administration. So Republicans and even some Democrats have criticized the Obama administration for not having a credible response. Senator John McCain said there is no strategy. The president said he would not rule out anything. Is that a strategy? Senator McCain said. Meanwhile, Democrats said that the strife was the result of former President George W. Bush's misguided invasion of Iraq in 2003. Representative Nancy Pelosi said one act of violence provokes another act of violence, and here we are.
Okay, so then we don't help because it was George W. Bush's fault? Is that the logic that we're trying to play here?
Well, that was the question I was going to ask. Is there a point where 11 years later, we look at a situation and say, okay, this is on our watch and not somebody else's, and we still have to deal. Going back to the point, we do indeed have to have a strategy. Alan?
I hate to do this, but I agree with Ray.
never happens.
At least I think I agree with Ray. You know, 11, whether we like it or not, when George Bush was the president, that's when he was the president. Whatever precipitated what came next, it is irrelevant to the American people who are looking to their political leaders to solve the mess. It's one of the reasons that our poor president has gray hair right now. Because
they all get gray hair in the second term.
This is incredibly difficult stuff to deal with. They're really, as Libby just said, and we've been talking about, there really is no good answer here. What in heck do you do in order to make this right? How do you incentivize the Shia folks to get out there and fight? The Grand Ayatollah just told them of Iraq, just said, get out there and fight with what? And here are these armies, and they're going towards the biggest city in the country. That's extraordinary. I don't see the way out for Obama, and I don't know what I would do if I were him.
So let me ask a more pointed question. And given that in the 11 years since this war was started, six of it has been on this president's watch. To John McCain's criticism that there is no strategy, do you believe, as you look at it right now, there is a strategy?
Who are you speaking
to?
Ray's looking right at me.
I just say that that is a ridiculous statement? For McCain to say that saying all options on the table is not a strategy, that's not a well-thought-out statement. Every president says all options are on the table. The plan is not to tell if you are going in, to tell what you are going to do. Just because he says all options are on the table doesn't mean that he does not have a strategy. That's all.
But are we – okay. But do you see a strategy? I mean
– Oh, I don't see a strategy, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have one.
Alan, what do you think?
Well, there are limited things that they can do. You know, we think this is this guy. He's sitting up there in the White House. He's the president of the United States. He gets to make strategic decisions. And yet we're sitting on our yes, yes, yeses at home. And we're thinking about what we would do. And the answer is we have the same options at our chessboard that he has there. And they don't look like they're very good options. I really think that McCain is still smarting from having lost the presidential election. But what can I say? One day he's doing great things. He's saying the right things. And the next day he's back to being snurdy and taking cheap shots.
Snurdy.
I think Ray makes a point.
And I also think that no matter what the president does, they're going to attack. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. They are going to be in full-on attack mode between now and November. And then
you mean the Republicans?
The Republicans. No matter what he does, they are not going to rally around the flag. They just aren't. I can only take their criticism with half of a grain of salt.
Meanwhile, back in Iraq, what do we do?
Well,
I mean, do we help right now?
I think we can't do it alone. I don't want to see us go in there alone.
Is there time for coalition building in this case when perhaps airstrikes could provide the support needed, at least to slow things down? I noted that last week or earlier this week, B-2s are in Europe for the first time. Maybe there's a connection there, and maybe those B-2s go, maybe they get the option to go over Turkish airspace, and they do a limited, very strategic strike there. Who knows? My question for the panel is, will the left back the president if he goes ahead and bombs the Islamists flat?
That's a really good question.
Well, I think there isn't any. And I don't think there is any bombing the Islamists flat.
Really?
Can't do it.
Oh, really?
Really, Ray.
I mean, I don't understand. Of course you could bomb them flat.
Yeah, well,
in
you
Iraq.
Bomb anything flat. We don't bomb everything flat. You got civilians to worry about. You've got all kinds of other issues. It has to be strategic. And when is the last time that the air power won strategically?
With all due respect, you're not answering my question. In other words, will the left back the president if he says, okay, we have to go in militarily in some fashion?
Most will shut up, and the others will complain. In other words, the usual suspects,
right,
as in Casablanca, will complain. But I think that most people will know intuitively that there's not much he can do here, that he's their president, and that he's cleaning up for the last guy. I don't think that you're going to find a lot of people marching on Washington, D.C.,
We only have a minute left, so I wanted to jump in, but it's a huge can of worms to jump into, which is, of course, and then we still have the Syria issue here, which with the huge issue that we sort of have dealt with and not dealt with and dealt with and not dealt with, and now we look at it and say, okay, well, did we forego an opportunity several months ago in dealing with this and seeing this coming?
Well, very quickly, let me just say, I've worried all along that we were backing the wrong horse in Syria.
Right.
That there, you know, if we had just shut up, you know, yeah, these are terrible people. They're all terrible people, you know. On the other hand, would we be replacing one terrible dictator with another bunch of terrible dictators? The answer to that is yes.
We're going to take a break. We're going to catch up on our underwriting, and we're going to do all that good stuff because we didn't take an earlier break. So we'll do that, and then we will come back and continue our conversation. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we will dip into the mailbag when we return and discuss many other issues in the news today. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Ray Graff, I'm Joe Donahue. We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.
You like the lightheartedness of
lighthearted Father's Day music. That's great. Puts all the fathers in a real good mood.
Brilliant. And accurate.
Welcome back to the roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue along with Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and Libby Post. Good morning, and we are back to discuss other items in the news. Let us talk about we're still going to talk about Eric Cantor because this is the story that won't go away because there's so many facets to it, and it's fascinating to look at. There is a New York Times article in the paper this morning by Peter Baker about the president's odds with Congress, in which they term bad to worse. And in the context of the article, they paint a picture of a very prickly relationship, not surprisingly, but perhaps a little bit more than we would have known, a prickly relationship between the president and Eric Cantor, but bringing up the larger issue of what it means for the president's legislative agenda. To read from the third paragraph of the article, as toxic as the relationship is and was, Mr. Cantor's defeat in a Republican primary in Virginia this week is no victory for what remains of Mr. Obama's legislative agenda. Much as White House officials grinned privately at unceremonious ouster of a rival, Mr. Cantor's political collapse has already been seized as a lesson by other Republicans to be even more determined in their opposition to Mr. Obama.
And Joe, I just wanted to say that there have been a lot of people who have checked in Iraq. And so whenever you're ready, I'll read those.
Okay, great. Do you want to comment on this?
Well, whatever you think is best. Your show. As far as I can see, it's business as usual. They weren't giving the administration anything, really, and they weren't going to give them anything. It was quite clear from the very beginning that the whole thing was just say no, and they were just saying no. So now the New York Times comes along in its brilliance, and it is brilliant, and says, this is only going to make things worse. How can it be much worse? That's the way that I see it. So
it just makes things worse for Congress.
Worse. Yeah, you know, I think there's an argument to be made, Libby, that for politically it's better for the Democrats.
Absolutely.
Because what happens now is it drives the whole party to the right, the Republican Party to the right. They're not reasonable. And elections, as I've said before, in America are won by the middle. And the further you get away from the middle, the more likely you are to be helping your opponents.
We when you think of all of the issues that we have before us, though, including Ukraine, including what we just spoke about, Iraq, does it? I guess I'm concerned that there's the legislative agenda, but then there's also the business that has to be done. And if there is such toxicity, then I agree with you. How does it get much worse? But could you look at it as an opportunity of getting, you know, of perhaps improving it as opposed to getting it worse? having it get worse.
I think some point Hillary, when she runs, or president when he runs, I've never understood one thing. Why they don't stand up and say, hey, look, you want to elect me president? Good. But don't elect me if you don't elect a Congress who can be with me. But they're always afraid to do that for a number of standard political reasons. FDR didn't do it that way. I am telling you now that this is a big mistake. Now, we just referenced John McCain standing up and say the president was asleep. Was this a guy who was working with his opponents on foreign policy? You know, in the old days, foreign policy used to be above politics. It certainly isn't anymore.
Okay, so let's go to the mailbag. We'll talk about Iraq, and then we'll move on to other topics. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, this is from Jim in Malta. You can't help those who won't help themselves. The Iraqi army outgunned and outnumbered the insurgents as much as 10 to 1, yet they ran away. Air power has never turned the tide alone. Stay out. I'm a veteran leftist and won't support an intrusion. McCain thinks Vietnam was a good idea. Okay, and then Kenner says, would it be crazy to sell arms to Iraq once again? Unlike the Reagan years, they and the Iraq regime are both Shia Muslims, so there's a coalition-building opportunity, and we could just drop sanctions on Iran, buy natural gas from them, and sell it in Europe, and thus mess with Putin. What could possibly go wrong? That's very funny. What could possibly go wrong? Walker says, why are we giving any credit to McCain's usual snark? As usual, he's in a snit about the president. Let's move on, even if he doesn't. The whole point about strategy is that it is secret. You don't talk about strategy in public. Ray, I think you made that point.
Yeah.
Strategy is not a plan. By its very definition, it's an outline and part of the inside game. This administration thinks six steps ahead and has a number of scenarios it plans for behind the scenes. The Republican critics know this, even though they always whine about certain things the administration says that, quote, tip off the enemy. Why are we spending time on this silliness? And Mary, Dr. Mary says, for Boner to say the president was taking a nap, it is a fundamentally contemptuous, disrespectful statement, yet no one even remarks on this anymore because this kind of speech about the president has become accepted and normal. It shouldn't be. It's vile. It's an example of the kind of hateful language that has been uniquely aimed at the president, uniquely underlined, by the way. And it's the kind of speech that makes it hard for the president to do his job. And Devorah says, maybe it's time to admit that since 2011, when we initially screwed up that country, we have not had a winnable coalition. As with Vietnam, we lost and cannot admit it. Spending more American lives will not change that. Lynn says, first of all, why would we spend more money on Iraq just to prop up the corrupt government, Nouri al-Maliki, who is becoming the Shiite version of Saddam Hussein? This isn't about a religious extension. This is about minority-majority, just as it is in Syria. ISIS is extreme, but the problem for their success is that al-Maliki was governing without the Sunnis. He wasn't, and by the way, Kerry said that today, he was intentionally leaving them out. Go back to the end of World War I and see how the British, the French, and USA initially carved out the Middle East so it would always be unstable with minority and majority populations. It's not our fight. The only so-called American interests are about oil, and it's time to stop supporting big oil with American blood and treasure. It's the 21st century. Time to move on. Joseph said, this was not a solution. This is not a solution of American origin. There is not a solution of American origin available. We are not going to invade, and we should not invade. Air power alone cannot win a war in any context, and that is precisely the civil war that was bound to happen when Iraq was initially invaded. Bad Shia governance has led to failed sectarian state, while arguably American definitively broke us apart by the choice of neocons. America, if we wanted to, cannot fix it alone. Michael says Saddam Hussein had it right. He was a savage, but he knew how to handle these people. There was peace in that country when he was in power. There were no weapons of mass destruction in that country. We should never remove him. G.W. Bush had it right. He left them in power, and that's it. And there were some others earlier, but that's
this
enough.
Is all hindsight, and nobody's saying, what do we do?
Yeah.
What do you do in that situation when you have a group like ISIS, who now is in possession of $429 million or whatever, including gold bullion, who potentially becomes the richest terrorist organization on the planet, with potential to do us harm, with potential for infrastructure and military weapons perhaps not seen by Al-Qaeda. So what does the president do? And I can't wait to see what everyone's reaction is when he does do something.
Yeah, you know, even in Montreal, they don't know. We got a note from Montreal from Nolo who said, in Montreal, for a few days of fine dining, join the show while getting ready for the first meal of the day. Thanks for a great show.
Bon appetit.
Answering your question, Ray, absolutely.
I'm going to have breakfast. That's what I'm going to do.
Lovely.
ISIS being the acronym for Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, right, for those of you keeping score at home.
Right.
Let us take a break. We will return and get to as many topics as we are allowed, the time allows us. We'll be right back after the short break.
Support for WAMT comes from Lake George Kayak Company, a kayak, canoe, and stand-up paddleboard center providing sales, rentals, and lessons. LakeGeorgeKayak.com. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington. Flowers for containers like petunia, lantana, portulaca, or tropical hibiscus, and mandevilla, plus garden furniture. WardsNursery.com. Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Offering computer-aided local anesthesia that helps with anxiety, PadulaDDS.com. And Troy Chromatic Concerts, announcing its new season, featuring five concerts with Garrick Olson, Tessa Lark, Mariinsky Orchestra, Les Violins de Roy, and Mozart Orchestra, TroyChromaticConcerts.org.
Don't talk back.
You just put on your coat and hat.
Talk back.
Welcome back to the Roundtable or the Dr. Demento show.
Doom.
I don't know.
Talk back. Another Father's Day classic.
Yes. Yakety yak, don't talk back. That should just be our theme song, shouldn't it?
Yeah, Vox Pop, certainly.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We move on to topics. Hey, Jill Abramson has a new job. The former executive editor of the New York Times will teach undergraduate courses in narrative nonfiction at Harvard University this fall. The university announced this on Thursday. It was just a month ago she was abruptly dismissed from the New York Times, canned, as Alan puts it, by publisher Arthur Sulzberger Jr., her firing less than 3 years after she was appointed the paper's first female executive editor. And now she is going to be teaching at Harvard for at least a year. She has previously taught journalism seminars at Yale and Princeton, and is a Harvard graduate herself from 1976.
I'm very impressed.
So she not only we talked about this in at the time.
She has a Harvard tat.
Well, that's right. Then we talked about this. She has a New York Times tattoo, the letter of the Times on her back, and now she also has the Harvard
one. An H
tattoo. So, so she really is representing the
both sides.
Well, it's getting to be like Sesame Street. A few more jobs, and she'll have the whole alphabet. Hey, Alan, how much does a visiting professor or a temporary professor of high stature? How much are they allowed to make? Is there a limit on something like that, or can they make a good penny?
They can make a good penny, as you put it, Ray. And I got to tell you, at Harvard, it's negotiable. Everything, this is not the state university where there's between this and that for a full professor. You know, they want somebody, they get them. However, I'm sure she'll be working on a book, too, about how I was fired at the New York Times, and it'll sell a lot of copies. And it's a great gig. I mean, you want to be a Harvard. It's a great place to sit while you're doing all this other work. Don't you think, Libby?
I think it's great. There's life after the New York Times. B, narrative nonfiction. Is that the politically correct way of talking about journalism now? I had never heard that before.
By the way, me neither. I mean, I had never heard it either.
Really, narrative nonfiction. Yeah. It's journalism. Let's be real. Let's talk about what it is.
Well, I think it's a story. Alan's point, a memoir.
So anyway, I think it's great that she's going to be there and that, Harvard is the pinnacle, some would think, of higher education in this country, and it's certainly a place for her to look back and look down. So I think it's great for her.
What do you mean down?
Well, you know,
do you mean
I mean, I think she can smile ruefully to 42nd Street and say, well, look where I am now.
So, well, you know, I think she's look, there's no way for her to look bad here.
No.
There isn't.
No.
He may have had good reason to fire her. We don't know. We weren't there.
Right.
But in fact, she's coming out looking better and better in all of this. And, you know, it's a very tough thing for anybody to fire anybody else. I know nobody's going to be crying crocodile tears for me, but you don't want to do it unless you have to. And the real question to me has always been whether he had to. Whether this was something that was just put upon him by number two coming to him and saying, hey, if number one doesn't go, I go. And apparently that may have been the case. That
well, somebody will write a book about it in about 10 to 15. Yeah.
And
well,
then
maybe about one to two.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Months.
And when they write the book...
it'll be a Facebook post.
Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, look how fast Hillary's book... hit the shelves after she was Secretary of State.
Yeah. So,
well, it's usually about a year and a half. Yeah. So then Hillary goes on Terry Gross to talk about the book, and they get into a snit.
Really? And, was this on last night?
Yeah.
So, I thought this was the stupidest thing I've read in a long time.
So...
What was it? What was it? Tell us all.
Okay, so
I don't
6 minutes of... it's one of your topics. It's 6 minutes of questioning on gay marriage. Hillary Clinton gets... testy with
I don't read that either.
Yeah.
You know, but, really, come on.
I'm painfully aware of that now. Hillary Clinton gets testy with NPR's Terry Gross after the Fresh Air host asked if the former Secretary of State changed her mind on gay marriage or she publicly stated something that she had always believed. I heard this. I listened to it again. I read the transcript, and I think there's a point as an interviewer that you know what you're going to get, and you say, okay, that's the answer. The audience will make up their mind. And Terry Gross used the moment to continue on looking for something. And I don't know that she found it, but what she did find is anger in Hillary Clinton. So just to summarize this a bit, Terry Gross says, so you mentioned that you believe in state by state for gay marriage, but it's a Supreme Court too. The Supreme Court struck down part of DOMA. Were you glad at this point that the Supreme Court struck some of it down? She said, of course, and you know, again, we're all living in a time when this extraordinary change is occurring, and I'm proud of our country. And Terry says, so just to clarify, just one more question on this. Would you say your view has evolved since the 90s or that American public evolved, allowing you to state your real view? And she said, Mrs. Clinton said, I think I'm an American. I think that we all have evolved, and it's been one of the fastest, most sweeping transformations that I'm aware of. I understand, says Terry Gross, but a lot of people believed in it already back in the 90s. They supported gay marriage.
No, they didn't.
Mrs. Clinton said, to be fair, Terry, not that many. Were there activists who were ahead of their time? Well, that was very true. And she goes on to talk about Texas, and she goes on to give examples. Then Terry Gross says, I'm pretty sure you didn't answer my question about whether you evolved or was the American public the change. And she said, because I'm an American, so of course we all evolved, and I think that's a fair conclusion. And this is where it turns.
We're running out of time.
Running out of time. So, Salute. And Terry Gross says, I'm just trying to clarify so I can understand. And Hillary Clinton finally breaks after 8 minutes of this conversation, says, no, I don't think you are trying to clarify. I think you're trying to say that I used to oppose and now I'm in favor and I did it for political reasons. And that's just flat wrong. So let me state what I feel like I think you are implying and repudiate it. I have a strong record. I have a great commitment to the issue and I am proud of what I've done and the progress we're making.
Excellent.
This is excellent. Making a mountain out of a molehill if I've ever seen one. You know, in the 90s...
Terry wants to show off. She wants to be known as the great interviewer.
I mean, I know, Alan.
It's not
but,
right.
But in the 90s, this issue was thrust upon the gay community by the guy down in New Paltz, and then Gavin Newsom. Nobody was ready for this in the community whatsoever. Yeah, we played catch up really quickly, but you know, Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, made one of the most impassioned speeches on behalf of lesbian and gay, bisexual and transgender human rights on the world stage ever done. She believes in marriage equality. What difference does it make? Everybody evolves on issues. You know, that's what being a human being is, that you think about things and you can evolve. And so whether or not she was there in the 90s, she's there now, and that's really what counts.
I think the whole thing that Terry Gross has predicated this on is not a good basis for a question. Hillary didn't sign DOMA.
Mm-hmm.
Bill signed DOMA. There are two separate people here. One is Bill. One is Hillary. One was president and dealing with a set of circumstances. One was the first lady at the time. End of discussion. This was not her signature on this.
I was really surprised that it took up. You know, you look. Let's face it.
But it's good radio.
Well, I don't know.
Well, what else was being discussed in the interview?
Well, that's the thing. You know, you have. This is a big get for anybody. For anybody in this business,
right. And getting waste your time
betting
on this.
Hillary Clinton is a big get. So, for all there is to discuss with this woman in an 800-page book, just in her career, to spend almost 11 minutes discussing this issue, trying to drive at a point, I don't know. It seemed very odd to me.
On the other hand,
I want to say one thing. I want to say one thing real fast. I interviewed her several times when she was a senator. She's brilliant. Not on Terry Gross's best day could she lay a finger on her. That's all I got to say.
Well, on the other hand, if you've seen some of the interviews that she's had, at least Terry Gross isn't throwing softballs at her. And you've seen that in a lot of interviews lately since this book has come out. So, you know, all right, maybe she went angle, but she at least tried to stir up some controversy.
It's okay if it's a ridiculous angle, but you give her credit.
She came out
me.
Looking not well. That's all.
Well,
Hillary came out looking fine.
Oh, Hillary came out looking fine. Terry came out not looking so
I think
hot.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And you know,
that's
she's
an entire panel.
Right.
We're all in agreement. The
you
first
know, I
time
think
ever.
That there's been a few gaffes lately on Hillary's part.
Oh, sure. Well, the biggest
poor.
One being I'm
flat,
dirt poor.
Flat
yeah.
but, you know, I think
I don't agree with that either.
Well, oh, for Pete's sake.
All right. So, we only have 30 seconds, but
let's just say that, you know, she's getting back on the public arena horse. And,
yeah, you betcha.
You know, it takes a little while to get back in the saddle.
Getting ready. All right. We want to thank everybody for being with us and everybody who wrote in. Roundtable@WAMC.org. To keep the conversation going, Libby Post, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok. For both Ray and Alan, happy Father's Day. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
Enjoy it, and thank you very much
Looking
for being a part of the program
tie.
This morning. Yes. I like your new tie.
No, I'm going to get a new tie. I mean, clearly.
Have a great weekend, Alan.
Okay, and you too, Joe, and everybody else.
All right. Thanks so much. More Roundtable after this.